It's the world famous Phil Henry Show every night here until 10 o'clock on the Pacific Coast and 1 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And I've been told by a few people, Margaret Gray, you were mentioning that I should stop yelling at the beginning of the show. Is that it?
Well, Phil, I don't want to tell you how to do it, but Frank was saying that you come on just la 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 and you...
Yeah, and Dangler said too.
Yeah, okay, bud. Thanks.
Well...
Anyway, welcome to our program. There probably is no reason for me to be yelling. I'm not yelling in anger, but I'm just yelling. All right, we do have Bobby Dooley coming up here in this segment. Ms. Dooley, of course, the Western States Homeowners Association. She had a very successful appearance this morning on Jay Moore Sports. That's Jay Moore Sports, and that's Jay Moore Sports Show, called Jay Moore Sports. Jay is one of the funniest men in the history of life on this planet, as you probably well know. And Bobby is featured on Tuesdays, and my understanding was you were a little bit late. And let's put Bobby on hold for a minute, if you wouldn't mind, Bud, because I just want to tell the audience something.
Bill, it's good to be with you.
Yeah, thank you. Put her on hold, will you, Bud? Because I can tell the audience something.
What?
You don't need to know what I'm telling them.
Why do you need to know, Bud? He says he's going to tell the audience something.
Yeah, I want to know.
You don't have to know. Here we go again, man.
Yep, I told you, man. You have to just shut up, man. I didn't say anything.
Don't ever ask me what. If I tell you to do something, you do it. Never mind. Put her on.
No, Phil, what were you going to say?
No, it's completely, you know, I'll mention it later on. That doesn't even have anything to do with anything. Hi, Bobby, how are you?
Well, what did you want to say, Phil?
Never mind, okay? It's fine. It's fine. It really is. Bobby Dooley with us, Steve Dooley. And what?
Well, I'm really curious now.
Yeah, no.
I have to be honest with you, Phil, so am I.
No, I won't do it. No, it has nothing to do with anything. It was me talking. I was talking to CJ about a book I was reading about veterans' benefits. It's got nothing to do with what we're talking about now, okay? We'll talk about it when we talk about it. All right, put her on hold. I was reading a... God.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Phil, but following up is very important.
I was reading a book called The Narrative of a Revolutionary Soldier by Joseph Plum Martin, and in the book, at the very end of the book, what do you think he says? He talks about all the things that the veterans of the Revolutionary War did not get. So we're talking about veterans, we're talking about veterans' benefits. It's a problem that we've had since the very beginning of our country, because even Joseph Plum Martin, in his book, Narrative of a Revolutionary Soldier, he ends the book with an entire chapter on what the soldiers were promised and what they didn't get, and what they are owed by their government. That's all. I was going to make a big deal out of it, and, you know.
All right, Ms. Dooley, you're back on.
Whoa, 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 hold on. I'll do it, okay? Ms. Dooley, you're back on.
Thank you, Bud. I'm sorry, this is Phil.
Yeah, it's Phil.
I apologize, Phil. I was just listening to Steve. What happened?
Well, you did have the 1224 pack.
Steve goes out and gets this Pabst Blue Ribbon beer, and they have the 24?
They have that 12.
All right. Well, I don't drink it.
Okay. So you were talking to him about that, huh?
Yeah. Well, you were whatever it was you were doing.
And yet you were one of the people that wanted me to...
Phil, I don't know. Are you going to start in on me? I'm not married to you. I heard you mentioning something about your ex-wife and what a big, fat, arrogant slob you were.
You did say that, Phil. You did.
Yeah, Mr. Henry.
Yeah, okay, everyone. Thank you. But I was talking about Joseph Plum Martin, okay?
Who's Joseph Plum?
Yeah, I heard that too, Steve. You hear that?
I was in the car. I heard about Joseph Plum.
Joseph Plum Martin, who was a soldier in the Revolutionary War.
Yeah, that's one thing.
Steve heard it.
Good. Thank you, Steve, very much.
Uh-huh.
All right, so...
Well, what about him?
I just got... Never mind. Welcome to our program. Ms. Dooley, how are things?
Well, things are going good, Phil, and I'm sorry, who... I really am interested to know.
He was a Revolutionary War soldier. He wrote a book. I was talking about it. Let's move on to what it was you were discussing this morning with Jay Moore, because I understand that there is a fan base growing for you as a football expert. Is that right?
No, I don't think there's a fan base growing for me as a football expert, Phil. It's just that I represent a rarity. I would say in America, I represent a rarity among women in America, and that is that I know about football. I'm conversant in the intricacies of the game and the different aspects of the game. It's one of those areas that I just happen to be good, unlike most women.
Bobby, this is Margaret. When you say that you are conversant with men on the subject of football, does that mean you can sit in a game and watch what's happening and have a conversation with a man that isn't going to irritate him?
Yes, that's a very good way of putting it, Margaret. Yes, that's pretty much it, because my father, who was in the military, as I mentioned in Phil, my father was in the Air Force, and unfortunately traveled to Orange County to the former Marine Air Base, El Toro, and realized that that was a Marine Air Station, not a United States Air Force base, and that's when he just decided to quit.
Yeah, I got all frustrated and everything.
Okay, Steve, I'll do it. He's my father.
I'm sorry.
Wait. Your father moved to El Toro? That's very interesting.
Well, my father didn't. I mean, the entire family did. We were very young at the time. And that's how we settled in Orange County, California.
Well, was your father stationed? How did he find his way to Orange County?
He was on his way to Beale Air Force Base in Rockland, California.
That's way north of where we are.
Yes, and that was the mistake that my father made. He was assuming he was traveling to the south of the state, and in point of fact, he was going north.
Well, and you're talking about El Toro, Rockland. They don't alphabetically, they don't... How did your father find his way south when he was supposed to be going north?
Well, Margaret, there's an old saying. I think it was from a Laurel and Hardy movie, so it's not an old saying. It's an old bit of dialogue, but I like it as an old saying. Where the judge says to the two of them, Laurel and Hardy, he says, "I want you out of this town, because if you are not out of this town, I'll twist your head so far around that when you're walking north, you'll be looking south."
I heard your voice crack a little bit.
Yeah, Miss Stanley, I was just going to say, I heard her voice crack.
I do. My voice cracks just a little bit when I talk about that, because it feels as if it just happened.
Well, it's a sensory memory, dear. That's what happens when we undergo an emotional strain.
So your dad wound up in, I'll twist your head so far around that you, when you're walking north, you'll be looking south.
Yeah, Mr. That's part of a Hardy and Laurel movie.
A Hardy and Laurel movie. That'll be interesting. Mr. Laurel, wherever he is, and I'm sure he's in a really far better place than here, will be interested to know that he now has second billing to Mr. Hardy. But nonetheless,
what's that mean?
Never mind. It means that he's got second billing, man. Laurel and Hardy? Well, now it's Hardy and Laurel.
Oh.
So, Bobby, tell me a little bit about the fan base that you've been developing has a flip side.
Well, it has a little bit of a flip side, and maybe we can get into it here after your break. I know you're coming up on a break, and we can stop with all of the Bud and the Margaret butting in, you know?
Excuse me, I'm a panelist.
Oh, God, I know you're a panelist, Margaret.
Well, what does that mean? Oh, God.
Well, every time I'm on, excuse me, I'm a panelist.
You don't talk about being on a panel, you know?
We know you're a panelist. My God, you've got me wishing you're on a death panel.
How dare, spoken like a real right-winger neocon, a death panel.
Well, isn't that what Obama wants to do?
All right, I don't want to get into Obama. His name is Obama, by the way.
I said Obama. Did I say that?
I said Obama.
I said Obama, all right? It's close.
That's right. It's close, dear. All it is horseshoes when we're talking about someone's name. Thank you, booby.
Okay, now it's my turn to be pissed.
All right, hold, just everybody. You know she hates that.
Well, then she can call our president by his right name. The very idea.
All right, we're going to be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show talking to Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley about this morning's appearance there on Jay Moore Sports and Bobby's... She's got an erudition, if you will. She's got herself some tuition. She's, in other words, pretty good, man, at analyzing, or the analization, as Jesse the Body Ventura would say, of professional footballs. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number is 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445. World-famous Phil Henry Show and Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley joining us here. Our number is 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445. And we have the Dooleys on to talk about the football season that is coming up, and Bobby Dooley, who has a podcast now, who is now increasingly present on Jay Moore's sports show, who has been increasingly present in print interviews. There's a lot going on with you, Bobby, and I understand that I am, I say I understand that I mean, I should understand. I'm the guy that's, never mind.
Yeah, that's very funny. If I could jump in, Phil.
Go ahead.
That's pretty weird for someone who is involved in a project to say, I understand, I was reading about me.
Yeah, what's that about?
I said it sounded weird. You don't have to... I said that it sounded weird, you know, and it does.
Well, it sounds like maybe you got something, you know, a chromosome gone or something like that.
Yes, you're always talking about missing chromosomes.
Yeah, do you think that's it, Mr. Inner? Probably not.
Yeah, that's it. I'm missing a chromosome. Oh, man. That's because I forgot.
Well, it's a bizarre mistake to make, Phil. Don't make a federal case out of it.
What was that?
Yeah, what is that, Miss Gray? I mean...
You were about to call me Miss Dooley, weren't you? Weren't you?
No.
All right, Mark, don't give him that look, okay? It scares the hell out of everybody, including me.
It's Bobby. It's all right. And I don't want to make a federal case. I did hear what you were saying. And I heard Phil do that. He said, I understand that I'm working. So before the program started, if I could just bring something up, I heard you say during your pre-show on the Phil TV part that you do.
Uh-huh.
You said that you had told your wife before that at lunch this afternoon.
Oh, yeah, this is a good part.
Yeah, this was the good part.
Okay, this was the good part of what?
It was the good part of your preview.
The preview of the Phil TV.
Oh, during our pre-show, okay.
Yeah, you said that you told your wife that during your marriage you were nothing more than a big, fat, arrogant slob. And the reason why, and I thought that was very forthcoming.
I did say that, yeah.
Well, I thought it was very forthcoming because when you say that, it explains why you would spend so much time saying, and I understand that me has a project.
Yeah, because you kind of glowed up.
When you get egotistical, you'll glow up.
Can we, you know, I don't want to use the word glowed up, if you don't mind.
Well, it is true, Phil. When you become egotistical and egocentric, you start saying, oh, yeah, me, me, me. You know, I.
Yeah, and so even if you're talking about, oh, I read about myself in the, oh, I just happened to be glancing in the paper.
All right, what has this got to do with what we're talking? This will be the question that people will know my show by, if they even remember my show 5 years after it goes off the air. But if they do, they will always remember it as the show where Phil kept yelling, what's this got to do with anything?
Phil, it has to do with anything. When you said that Bobby is involved in a lot of projects, and then you segued, and oh, by the way, I'm doing stuff. What's that got to do with anything?
Yeah, what has that got to do with anything?
It is true, Phil.
Because I was going to talk about something. It doesn't matter. It was something that you and I are involved in, Bobby, which we will not talk about.
Oh, that, yeah.
I know about that, too.
All right, take it easy, will you, everybody? Bobby Dooley, Steve Dooley. Bobby, let's get back to your prowess, your ability as a football analyst. I know that you've gotten some good reaction doing sports radio with Jay Moore and others. Now, you've also gotten some negative reaction. You're the president of a homeowners association. You have a lot of contact with others in the homeowners association. Pardon me for puking that up a little bit. I know I just went, you have a lot of contact, and I didn't mean to do that.
Well, you know, Phil, you asked us to point that out, and I was just about to.
No, I caught myself doing it. Tell me about the reaction that you're getting from the homeowners there.
Well, from a lot of the women in the Homeowners Association?
Yeah.
It is an interesting reaction. It isn't one that I thought that I would get. I told a lot of the gals, and we do have our circle of taste. That is an informal interior circle of the larger Homeowners Association. In other words, when you move into Western Estates, you are a member of the Homeowners Association. But if you want daily contact with myself, with Steve, with my friends, those of us who have the inner circle contact and control of Western Estates, you have to qualify for something called the circle of taste. One of those things is a fair amount of knowledge of football because it keeps our men happy. You don't have to be as good as me. I am pretty much as knowledgeable as most men when it comes to football.
Really? Now, you grew up with, you say your father was the one that got you guys, and I say you guys, your whole family, into football. Did he sit with you individually and give you a sort of instruction, or was it just watching the games?
Well, it was just watching the games on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of figuring it out from there. I think much the same way that a young man probably figured the game out. Young men had the extra added opportunity of playing the game. But as a girl, I did what I could, and I really enjoyed it.
So what has the reaction been like?
Well, it's been negative.
I wanted to ask you something, Bobby, and this may be off point. I wanted to ask you about Pop Warner football. I'll save it for later.
Yeah, my boys have played it, Margaret.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that later.
But to answer your point, Phil, the women that I've encountered at Western Estates it's amazing. They're hostile to me. They don't like the fact that I know about football. It irritates them when we have our chili cook-off, which we usually have at the Super Bowl, when the Super Bowl is played. And I am there with the guys. You know, there's a whole group of all these big guys, you know, all the men, all the husbands. And in the middle is little me. I'm very petite. I'm only 5'4", and very light. And when one of the teams scores a touchdown, one of the guys will pick me up in the air. And the guys, we have a good time. I think men are starving for that. I think they're craving it. I think men are... They're good sports. They tell their wives and their girlfriends, it's okay, you know, you can watch the game with me, and I'll explain it to you.
So do you find that there is, because of the way you're saying that, is there a resentment, though, among men that their wives, that their girlfriends, that their women do not appreciate the game of football to the point where they understand it, they're always having to explain it?
Oh, I do, Phil. Yeah, I really do.
And how does that manifest itself?
Well, like I say, if we're watching one of the games, we have regular season games that we'll show in the community center. It could be our chili cook-off. It could be a wine tasting. A lot of things. The guys show a depression. They get dispirited when they see that their women might say something that's not very intelligent. I can give an example if you want.
Go ahead.
Well, we are watching a game. I think one of the common things that women will say is, How much points do you get? How much? They don't even grammatically say it properly, and they sound really ignorant, and they embarrass the men that they're with. So they'll say, oh, after a field goal is kicked, how much points do they get for that? And you see the husbands sort of cast their eyes around as if to say, you know, who heard that? And
mm-hmm. So the men are embarrassed in front of the other men?
I think it's a lot of times the kids are there. I think they're embarrassed for their sons, especially. I've seen young men who may be with the families. They'll hear their mothers say, he made a good run when it was a ridiculously bad. I saw a very famous sack of Tom Brady in one of the, I think it was the St. Louis Ram game. Tom Brady was sacked for a loss, but he had scrambled effectively for a few seconds trying to get out of bounds, and he never did make it out of bounds. And one of the women said, oh, he made a good run, and you just want to, you know, you want to crawl into a hole on behalf of her because she's not even bright enough to know that she needs to crawl into one herself.
Wow, that's some interesting observations. We're talking to Bobby Dooley from the Western States Homeowners Association about women. You know, the football season in earnest begins, the regular season in earnest, this coming Sunday. It's going to be a lot of fun. Bobby, you can hear her featured not only on our own show, but she is also on Jay Moore Sports. She has her own podcast, the Bobby Dooley podcast, which this past couple of weeks has involved the interviewing of Henry Rollins, the great iconic rock star and poet and activist. So, Bobby, you're a multi-talented and multifaceted woman in terms of your interests. We are discussing football and the lack of knowledge that the American woman still has. And that's sort of frustrating, too, isn't it?
It's frustrating, Phil, because you hit the nail on the head, I think, in what you were going for there, which is that there certainly have been so many years of opportunity for American women to learn about football. And they have just sat there like bumps on the log, and they still sound each week just as really, forgive me, as stupid as they always do.
All right, Bobby, hang on the line here as we talk here with Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley from the Western Estates Homeowners Association about women in football and how well they and how little they know it and how they are jealous of her because she does know a lot about football and is oftentimes in the middle of a crowd of guys and they're picking her up and throwing her and she's sort of a one of the gang. Our number is 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445. World famous Phil Henry Show coming back. Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Every night till 10 o'clock here on the El Pacifico and 1 a.m. on the East Coast. Coming up in our next hour, Larry Grover of Conservatives of Kern County will take on a pretty explosive topic, the use of the N-word in the workplace by black people, by African Americans. Is it a term of endearment? That's an explosive trial that's happening right now in New York, and we're going to talk with Larry about that coming up next hour here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Right now, Bobby and Steve Dooley joining us from Western Estates in Western Estates, the Western Estates Homeowners Association, Western Estates, California, and we're discussing football and the knowledge that women have of football. And now Ms. Dooley has found herself the recipient of hostile remarks. Bobby, maybe you can tell us in terms of the reaction that other women have had toward you because you know about football.
Yeah, thank you, Phil. The reaction has been predictable. Nonetheless, it's very searing and scarring, I think. And I'm simply saying to other women, this is not the time for us to be turning on those of us who may have the ability to teach other women things that are going to move us along in our relationships with our men. The fact that I know about football and I can talk about it good with other men, and the fact that the men find me, enjoyable to be with, I don't think that's unusual. I don't think women should be threatened by that. And I do feel that they're threatened, you know. A lot of women are women are threatened by me. I think women are threatened for obvious reasons by other women. Because I'm, I don't know, because I may have a certain look. I did some modeling. Maybe they think that I have a model's physique and that I am a danger to their husbands.
Well, you're not, are you? I mean...
No, of course not.
My wife behaves good.
My husband Steve is just backing me up there, but I'll do it, Steve.
You're not a whore.
Please don't use that word.
Oh my God! Did your husband use the word whore?
He did, Steve. That is.
Okay, we're not talking about that. But I think what you're saying is you are very respectable and proper in your behavior.
Absolutely, Phil. And the men react to me with great enjoyment because they say, here is a woman, this is something we don't see a lot, and that is a woman that understands football and isn't just trying to sound knowledgeable. That's one other thing I want to warn the gals about this coming weekend. There's going to be a lot of gals that are going to be watching football, and they're going to try to make the effort at sounding knowledgeable. It's really disastrous. It's been my experience that when women do that...
What are some of the things that women say that give them away sort of as amateurs trying to sound professional?
Well,
Maybe not professional, but knowledgeable.
Yeah, well, one of the things, as I mentioned, Phil, was, oh, that was a good run, even when quite obviously he was scrambling to get out of bounds. Or when they say, I heard Geraldine Griffiths say this, Margaret, you know her.
Yes, I do. Geraldine is, she's always trying to impress... I think I know the time you're talking about.
Yeah.
She was saying, oh, that's a good long ball. Ooh, when there was a deep pass.
Yes, there was a long pass by one of the quarterbacks in one of the games. And I think I told Margaret about it. And Geraldine said, ooh, there's a good long one. Ooh. And I looked at her, and I think I nudged her, and I said, Geraldine, my God. And she said, what? I said, you probably... Really, if I were you, I wouldn't say anything else after that. And she said, well, what are you talking about? I said, you sounded so stupid. And...
Well, she'd start crying.
She started to cry a little bit.
If anybody is eager to sound... I guess it's a matter of being accepted.
Phil, that's it exactly. A lot of gals want to be accepted.
Well, Margaret, I was going to say there was one that you did.
One that I did? I don't go to football events except for the Super Bowl parties that you have. All right. I'll give you that. But I don't think I've ever made a fool of myself. I was just thinking about, and I was pausing because I felt a belch forming in the back of my throat, and I decided that I would hold it back so Phil doesn't get upset. You happy?
My God, she just...
Yeah, I mean, what was that about?
A belch was forming in the back of my... Do you want me to go through it again?
So you withheld a belch?
Yes, Phil's always making a big deal out of it.
All right, thank you very much. So, what happened with Margaret here?
You don't have to talk about... I'm not in the third person.
All right, Margaret. Margaret, you recall at one of the Super Bowl parties when I think it was a handoff or it was a touchdown or something... And you gave the score.
I remember. I gave the score. The halftime score was, I think, 17-7 Baltimore, and I said it was 7-17.
Yeah, and that is the... There's nothing more obvious a gaffe, nothing that marks you as an amateur more, and nothing really that embarrasses your husband, embarrasses your son, embarrasses you in front of other women, and marks you as such a rank... imbecilic amateur as giving the score backwards like that. I felt betrayed.
Why did you feel betrayed? Because you said that to me later.
Because you're one of my inner circle, and for you to say, oh, it's 7-17.
Well, first of all, I did not say it was 7. You know what, out of respect to Phil, we won't argue about this here.
All right, now I appreciate that very much.
Okay, we can talk about it later. But,
I didn't say, ooh. I said, it's 7. I think Frank walked in. He said, what's the score? I said, honey, it's 7-17, the Baltimore Colts. And...
Yeah, and it's the Baltimore Ravens.
I know that.
Yeah, you really carved it up, as Phil likes to say. And in so carving it, I wasn't about to say, oh, yeah, she's a friend of mine. You know?
Well, that's, I thought, the cold shoulder. There's a lot to talk about here, Phil.
All right, that does sound like there's a lot to talk about there. If there was a cold shoulder and that there was some straining of your friendship. Friendship, we're talking to Bobby Dooley, and she's talking with us about her knowledge of football, how it goes far beyond the average woman's knowledge of football. And it tends to show up women at football parties, and it tends to have Bobby be the center of attention among the men. I want to talk to you about the Carolyn, not Carolyn, because I'm thinking of a talk show host I know, Janice Greeley, who is a friend of yours, right?
Yeah, Janice is a very good friend of mine. I don't know which event you're talking to. She has been troublesome at a lot of the football events.
Well, there was one where she went into the crowd of men that were surrounding you.
Yeah, it was her husband, Carl. What happened, Phil, was... we were watching one of the playoff games a couple of years ago, I think, and it was Indianapolis or New England and Indianapolis. I think Tom Brady had completed a short out to the big tight end. I forget the young man's name. It was a short out that he turned up field for. He really broke a few tackles and really muscled his way to a good first down, a quality first down run, and they hadn't been using their short game much. So I made that comment. To Carl Greeley, I said, you know, they really got to start using that short pass to the fullbacks.
See, this is the part that really grates on the other women's nerves. You sound like you think you're so special. You know, oh, the short out.
Well, I'm sorry, Margaret, if I know things that you don't.
It grates on the nerves.
Hold on. I want to hear not specifically about you, Margaret. I want to hear about Carl Greeley. And this is Janice Greeley's husband.
Yeah, his name's Carl Greeley, not Carl Greeley. You just...
I'm sorry, I was out of breath. Carl Greeley.
Yes. So I said, Carl, they're using the short game good. They're using the fullback. I like what they're doing here. I'd like to see Brady play action, but I also want to see him run a draw here. I think the middle is wide open because they're looking for those sideline routes. And Carl, he just spontaneously hugged me and lifted me up in the air, and he said, oh, my God, it's so wonderful to talk to a woman who knows something about football and doesn't sound like a gibber. The word that he used was a gibbering, simian-like imbecile. And it was very cruel because Janice was in earshot. She waited in between the men. She was on the outside of this circle. It was about three deep of men. I was in the middle of it, naturally, because I just had made these series of comments that the men respected. And I hear a woman saying, you know, you're not going to hold me back. You might as well get out of my way, or I'll take your eyes out, too. Something like that.
Good Lord.
Yeah, and it was Janice. I heard a man scream. She had gone for the groin of one of the men. I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and when she finally reached me, I had no choice. I had to put her down, and I did with a series of punches, and then I had to hit her with one of the serving trays. A lot of people laugh about that story, Phil.
Why? Why would they laugh about that?
They think it's funny that I hit her, but it was a terrible day. I put her in the hospital. I love her dearly. We're good friends now, but it was a terrible, terrible day, and it started a strain on our friendship.
All right, I got to hear about this, a little bit more about this this fight that took place at a football party, a gathering, a get-together that Bobby and Steve Dooley were having for their homeowners. Ms. Dooley is talking to us about the difficulty of being a knowledgeable woman when it comes to football and how it feels to be that way among women that are jealous of that and women that don't like to hear that and women that are openly hostile to that. And we're going to hear about an encounter she had, a violent encounter she had with a member of her Homeowners Association council. World-famous Phil Henry Show, 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445, and philhenryshow.com. World-famous Phil Henry Show, every night till 10 o'clock on the West Coast, 1 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this year's show. Along with me, of course, Margaret Gray, Bud Dickman, and Robert Leonard. Next hour, we have Larry Grover talking about an explosive trial in New York State having to do with the N-word being used in the workplace by black people, by African Americans, to each other as a term of endearment, or at least that is the argument being made by one of the principals in this case. Very interesting story, and we're going to have, I don't know why we have Larry Grover commenting. It's the only problem I have, bud, you know.
But Mr. Grover is a conservative of Kern County.
What, that has nothing really to do with the...
Trying to get a black man, but they all did not want to comment.
All right, well, we have Ms. Dooley on the line here from the Western States Homeowners Association talking about women and football and how Ms. Dooley's knowledge of the game has caused a rift between herself and other women in their homeowners association. It's caused a rift between herself and other women when they're actually watching one of the games. And I know at the community center you have there, people may not be familiar. Homeowners associations are simply associations of homeowners where you get together and vote, Ms. Dooley, on what is a typical issue.
Well, a typical issue might have to do with the architecture, landscaping, making sure that all of the properties are kept up to a certain standard, making sure that, you know, we have security, that things are going the way other homeowners want them to go, that there isn't a problem. It's just to improve the quality of living for everyone concerned. And then we have our Homeowners Association gatherings, which are strictly social events. We do watch a lot of the football games at the community center, and we will have different events around this. We've had chili cook-offs, we've had wine tastings, we've had barbecues. Our tri-tip barbecue is very popular. We have an oldies dance, you know, where you'll sweat to the oldies. Ooga booga, doo 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 doo. I don't know the name of the song, Steve.
Yeah, the black man. One of the oldies goes to ooga booga.
Yeah, the oldies that you listen to.
I don't know of any oldie that goes ooga booga, but...
Margaret's a singer.
Yeah, Margaret, what is the song that goes booga boo, doo doo doo?
I don't know, dear. That's very vague.
Well, a lot of the oldies. Let's see.
I know when it goes papa oo mow mow, la da boo doo doo.
Do you know when it goes papa oo mow mow?
Yes, the Rivingtons, papa oo mow mow.
No, that's not it, is it?
No, it goes, but it goes pop in my mouth.
What about Surfing Bird by the Trash Men?
What? What kind of retard?
All right, let's watch the retard thing, if you don't mind.
I'm sorry, Phil.
All right, so getting back to what we're talking about, there was a physical confrontation between yourself and Janice Greeley at one of your Homeowners Association events.
That is correct, yes.
All right, at that event, you had made a series of comments that were extremely intelligent. You were talking about it was a New England game, and you were watching Tom Brady working the passes to the sidelines, to his fullbacks, to his tight ends. That was, you felt, clearing out the middle for a draw play. And all of these are terms, ladies and gentlemen, that football fans would know, and you were probably making enemies among the women that were present, correct?
Well, in particular, Janice, when I said, and I think the key line was when I said this would be a perfect time for the offensive coordinator for Brady to audible, to check off on the line and call a draw play. When I said he should check off on the line and...
Now, what does that mean, check off?
That's a guy on a Star Trek.
Ha, 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 isn't that funny?
Mark, what are you laughing at?
No, a lot of people say that, Phil.
We're not talking about him.
It's an audible signal that the quarterback will call on the line. He changes the play.
Right, he changes the play at the line that maybe the offensive coordinator had called.
Yes. And I said to Carl Greeley, Janice's husband, I said, this is a great time for him to check. He ought to check the play off the line and go ahead and run a draw play. And Carl said, it looks like the middle's open. And I said something stupid like, that's what she said. And I think that's what got Janice.
See, right there is probably what pissed Janice off. Excuse my language.
Yeah, I think so. Because that's when I heard her say, get out of my way. I don't care if I've got to carve her eyes out, too. Something like that.
What does that mean?
I don't know, Phil, but it was frightening to hear. And I heard her. I heard a man scream. As it turned out, it was Bill Flemington. She kneed him or something.
Good Lord.
Yeah. So I'm trying to just skip the event. And then she broke through to the inner ring where Carl and I were still embracing and celebrating I don't know what we were celebrating. I think that Carl was just throwing his arms around me and saying, my God, I'm so lonely without a woman who knows about football like you.
Well, that's going to make her angry.
Well, it wasn't sexual, Phil.
Yeah, I can see how Janice might have gotten angry.
Angry to the point where she's threatening me violently?
No, I would say no. That's not an excuse. But you're embracing Carl. You guys are jumping up and down. And Carl is saying what?
Well, he was saying, Phil, that, excuse me, I'm yawning because suddenly I'm just, I don't know why I suddenly got so bored with this. It might have been the sound of Margaret's voice. Forgive me, Margaret, but when I hear women talking football, I start to yawn. I'm so bored.
Well, excuse me, but we're not talking about football now. We're talking about a woman's husband. All right?
Yes, I understand that, but it was not sexual. He was just overjoyed that a woman knew football. So he was hugging me. Janice broke through the ring and said, you get your hands off my husband. And I said, Janice, you know not what you do. And it sounded biblical, and I think that also got her angry. And that's when I hit her with a right hand. It didn't drop her, Phil. She was a tough girl. I thought that it would. I came back with a left.
So you did hit her with did you hit her with an overhand left?
No, it was a jab. But I was going right for the chin, right for that knockout center in the chin. That didn't drop her, and I got scared. And that's when I reached for one of the serving trays, and I hit her across the head with it, both coming from the right side. Then I switched off the hands. I hit her as hard as I could with the tray from the left side. Now I saw the knees buckle, but she grabbed the side of the table. And she never took her eyes off of me. This was the thing that was frightening me, Phil. And you have to understand, I don't know how many fights you've been in. And knock wood, I haven't been in a lot of them. But my father taught me how to fight. He taught me football. And he taught me fighting. I'm sorry, but I'm...
Take your time, darling.
Thank you.
You need... I know it's an emotional memory.
It really is.
You hit her with a right hand, with a left hand.
Yeah, Phil, she hit her with an overhand right, then a left jab. Neither one of them dropped her, right?
That's correct.
And she never took her eyes off of you.
I mean, they staggered her. They stopped her. And I saw her do a wobble, and I thought, all right, she's ready to go. I hit her with the left. It was a left jab. And I mean, it was a bullseye. She was staggered again. It did not drop her. I saw it wobble her. It did not drop her. I grabbed a silver serving tray that Karen Yardell had brought for her baked beans.
Oh, those are, yes, all right.
And I said, God forgive me, Karen, wherever you are. At that time, I had no idea she was in the women's restroom with someone else's husband, but we can talk about that later. I grabbed the tray.
All right, I let's not get into what other women were doing.
Well, okay, unless they were trying to gouge my eyes out, is that what you mean?
No, but Bobby, I don't want to get into who's in what bathroom, please.
All right, fine. I grabbed the serving tray. It had residual bean on it. I'm trying to tell you, the bean dip was dripping off of it. And as hard as I could, I swung it, and I hit Janice full on the side of her head with the serving tray. And I'm telling you, it put a dent in the tray. Again, she staggered. Again, she begins to wobble. Again, her eyes do not leave mine.
That must have frightened you.
Well, I thought I had... I swear to God, I looked at Carl, and at that instant, I said to him, your wife doesn't do dust, does she? Because, and he said, what? I said, is your wife dusted?
You were asking Carl Greeley if she smoked PCP.
Yes, because I didn't know what was going on, Phil. I was frightened to death. I switched off to the left hand. I took the tray. It's still dripping bean dip, and there's bean dip all down.
Take your time, darling.
There's bean dip all down the side of her head. I hit her on the left side of the head with the tray. A full splash of bean dip now embedded on the left side of her head.
What? Did any of that put her down?
No, it did not. And it was at that time that Carl said, you've got my permission. He handed me a fire extinguisher. And God forgive me, but that's what I basically used it as a battering ram against her nose and her forehead. Boom, once, twice, that's what did it.
My God.
That was...
My God, and I'm going to tell you right now, she better not have tried to sue.
No, she did not, because Carl backed me up 100%, and that really teed her off.
Well, Bobby, I wish we could stick around and hear more, and I thank you, Margaret, for giving us a little of the background as well. That was unbelievable, and that's Bobby Dooley talking with us about the competition, the anger, the hostility that she encounters when she, a football fan, sounds off as a football fan at football parties and how other women resent it. That fight between her and Janice Greeley, a serving tray, and finally a fire extinguisher direct to the nose and the bridge of the nose and the forehead of Janice Greeley. Unreal. Coming up next, it's Larry Grover on a trial involving the N-word in New York, the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 855-507-445. Wow. Wow.
I don't know. I was just frightened to death.
Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, where truth is our bitch every night here Monday through Friday, and online at philhenryshow.com, that's philhenryshow.com. This hour, Larry Grover and the use of the N-word among blacks on trial in New York case. And Margaret Gray, along with Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman, joining us. Bobby Dooley, last hour, with the harrowing tale of a fist fight that erupted between herself and a very good friend of hers, Janice Greeley. I just find that to be astounding that I know that her father taught her to box.
Well, Bobby does know how to fight. And you know, if you're a woman and you never learned those pugilistic skills or whatever you want to call them, the martial arts, and you go up against a woman that does know how to fight or box, what have you, it can be very devastating. So I think the days where we used to joke about cat fight or, you know.
Yeah, dogs talk about pulling each other's hair.
Yes, pulling each other's hair. No, those days may still exist in some circles, but there are women that really do know how to, as the men like to say, throw down.
What about you, Margaret?
Well, I'm not a woman that is prone to any of that kind of behavior, but I can tell you that I have no fear for my own safety when it comes to... If I've got to take on another woman that way, if push comes to shove, I've got no problem. But I certainly don't opt for that as readily as some women might.
So there are women who are ready to drop the gloves, as they say, and go at it every bit as much as some men.
Well, they're not street fight. I don't think we know women as street fighters or street toughs the way we know some men as gang members, that kind of thing. But Bobby, you see, in that fight with Janice Greeley, she went immediately to the fists.
Yeah, but Greeley was coming through the crowd to her.
Yeah, that's, she heard her scream. But she didn't hear her scream. She heard a man scream, and she knew that she had to do something, you know, because she felt like a safety.
Yeah, she did. She felt as if her own personal safety was threatened.
Well, that in that case, you know, there's a lot of things you can do. But yeah, the thing that surprised me about Janice Greeley, and it's not totally surprising because we do see this happen. There's a lot of men who have, and I'm sorry, Phil, I don't mean to be insensitive, but there is a thing called retard strength.
Yeah, that's what they call it.
All right, now hold on for a minute.
I said I didn't mean to be insensitive.
You may not. I don't want to even hear that, okay?
Well, what are you getting all angry at me for?
Yeah, that's extremely insulting and bigoted, and I would think you'd know better.
Yeah, you know, I told her not to say that.
You didn't tell me any such... Don't lie, Robert. You didn't tell me any such thing.
I said not to say anything that's going to be bigoted.
I didn't know saying...
Don't say that, okay? It not only is it a insulting thing to say, it's also a stereotype that is unfortunate.
But you don't think that a guy that's a retard...
You shut up with that, man, or I'm going to belt you.
All right. Can we say disabled?
I will say it for everyone that I don't want to have any more discussion, okay?
Why do you get to say it tonight?
Because I'm the host of the show, and I want to make sure that it doesn't get misstated. We're not going to use that word. There is a stereotype. It's an unfortunate stereotype, like a lot of stereotypes, that, for instance, I'll give you a stereotype that's horse dung right now. Blind people have better hearing than most. No, they don't. No, they don't.
No, wait just a minute, Mr. You don't have no way to say that.
I just know that they don't, you know.
How do you know that, Mr. Henry?
Because it's ridiculous. There's never been any scientific study done that studies blind people and concludes that they have better hearing. Okay, and if you want to know the truth, I used to live near a place that was a residential complex for visually impaired people. I saw them coming out of their little residences there, and they would go across the street, and they would have coffee or whatever they did. And I was a teenager, and, okay, I used to kind of creep up on them with my car and hot rod the engine a little bit.
What a complete ass. You did that as a child.
I did it as a stupid teenager, yes.
Man, that's cruel.
I didn't, hold on. I didn't try to hit them. I just would sit there and go zoom, zoom with the engine, right?
Yeah, what'd they do? Must have been interesting.
See, you got him laughing.
Don't laugh, bud. They reacted normally, but it was not as if they could hear it any, you know, they weren't holding onto their ears as if it was bleeding. Like, you know what I'm saying?
No, I don't know what you're saying. I think what you just said there said a lot about you, didn't say anything about the visually impaired. And I think you just made yourself look like a Neanderthal, a knuckle dragger. And I feel way better because I might be taking over the show tomorrow. That's how dumb and dumbass, and if I may be allowed the French pronunciation, Damas, you sounded.
Not funny.
I'm not trying to be funny.
Well, Damas.
I'm not trying to be funny. What a...
You just called me the D word.
Yeah, I heard that.
I did not.
Anyway, the point being that I don't want to hear that blankety-blank strength. Now, Janice Greeley was hit with a right hand. According to Bobby Dooley, she was hit with a right hand, a left jab, then clobbered twice with a serving tray, and all four of those blows did not drop her. She was staggered, but she kept her eyes fixed on Bobby.
Well, what they did was they slowed her down. They did stop her. They did stop her because she was on her way to Bobby. If Bobby hadn't done that combination, both with the fists and the serving tray, which my understanding was it a silver serving tray, bud?
Yeah, my understanding was it was, yeah.
Great. Good for you. Jesus.
Well, what did you ask me for? You're going to make fun of me.
Yeah, you asked him.
Fine, but okay, thank you, bud. In any event...
All right, well, I'm not going to belabor this, and I don't want to hear anybody else talking about it any further. We'll just say that Janice Greeley, she was a tough one to bring down.
Yeah, probably need an elephant gun or something.
Yeah, now there's something you could make a comparison to.
So I'm going to take a woman who is really rather strikingly lovely and compare her to an elephant.
No, what you should do instead is use forgive me, folks, use these highly offensive terms like retard strength. That's way better.
Phil.
Just never mind. Ms. Grilly, it took four strikes and then finally what was it?
Fire extinguisher.
A fire extinguisher. Those are heavy pieces of metal, big canisters. And Dooley says that she drove this fire extinguisher into Greeley's nose, the bridge of her nose, and her forehead until finally she put her down.
I agree. I have to ask, and I asked it before, was she smoking dust? Was she dusted? You know?
Yeah, but she's doing Shermans.
Shermans? Boy, you guys are really current.
Well, nothing that I know of, Phil, is going to keep someone on their feet.
What about methamphetamine? What about, maybe she was snorting that stuff. I mean, I have no idea.
Probably snorting on a crank. Oh, you'd see the sores on her face.
Well, that is true. You'd see those open, gaping wounds on her face, and she'd look about 50 years older.
Well, not if she was just beginning to use the stuff, no. Anyway, we're all done with that conversation. Coming up, Larry Grover. A federal jury has rejected the argument that the use of the N-word among blacks can be a culturally acceptable term of love and endearment, deciding its use in the workplace was hostile and discriminatory. Larry Grover is going to join us. He is a white man. I don't know why I would choose to have and there's nothing wrong with that necessarily, but my understanding from Bud Dickman as well as Robert Leonard is that Mr. Grover made a big issue out of the fact that we didn't want to have him on. We wanted to have an African-American on, and Grover was screaming about racism. Is that it?
Yeah, it's not a bloody racist. You try to put a black man on.
So that's why. All right, so we're going to be talking to Larry Grover here in a few seconds on the world-famous Phil Henry Show on this landmark case, as we call it. Don't forget philhenryshow.com, the online presence of the Phil Henry Show. This is where you go and get your backstage pass. You can watch a live streaming video of our show. You can listen to 5,000 hours of archived audio. You can listen to a podcast of tonight's show. You can listen to a podcast that's drawn from our archives. You can, I almost choked up on that, our archives. You can go to our online store and you can check out all the goodies that we have there for you. This isn't just a radio show, man. This is a lifestyle. This is a tribe. This is a tribe called Bud. I like that, Bud. World famous Phil Henry Show, our number 855-507-445. It's not just a show. It's a tribe called Bud.
That's me. That's an order.
Way to upcut it, Bud.
Thank you.
That's not a compliment. Welcome back. It's the world-famous Phil Henry. You know what upcut is?
No.
You carved it up, Bud. You upcut it.
Don't worry about it. Anyway, welcome to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Larry Grover going to join us from Conservatives of Kern County, and the discussion this hour is a very, very... It's an interesting trial that I believe has come to a conclusion. Larry joining us from Culver City, California. And Larry, give me, a thumbnail on this.
Federal jury, as you said, Phil, rejected the argument that the use of the N-word among black people can be culturally acceptable, can be a culturally acceptable term of love and endearment, deciding its use in a workplace rant was hostile and discriminatory. So last week, jurors awarded a $250,000 award to a black employment agency worker who was the target of an N-word-laced rant by her black boss, and they returned to Manhattan federal court, I guess, next Tuesday to decide on punitive damages. It was an interesting case because I feel this is what I've been saying, and I agreed with the gentleman, Rob Carmona, and the employment agency that he founded, Strive, in East Harlem. This case gave legal airing to what some see as a complex double standard surrounding the word. It's a degrading slur when uttered by whites, but can be used at times with impunity among black people. See, that's what I'm saying. And what I'm saying is that I don't think whites should use it necessarily. The jury's still out on whether or not a white can go up to a black and say, "You are an N." The jury's still out on that.
No, the jury's not still out on that, Larry.
Well, Mr. Henry, I know you have very decidedly liberal agenda, I think.
It's not called an agenda. It's called an opinion. What do you mean agenda, man? It's just my opinion.
Okay, Phil. I can't stay with you when it comes to all of the slogans, the terms you use to be relevant and hip to your audience. when you say things like, hey, man, you know, and that nonsense. I'm just saying to you.
What has that got to do with what I'm saying? It's my opinion that there's no acceptable use. There's no acceptable use of the N-word among white people to black people. I just don't. I don't think there is.
All right. And again, that's the double standard. See, a lot of the whites, myself included, are saying, how come he gets to say that to him, but I don't get to say it to him?
No, that's not what it's about at all, man.
There you go with the man again. See, what I'm trying to do...
That's not some kind of a hip term. I'm saying, come on, Larry. You're the same generation as me. It's a word that is used colloquially to emphasize a point. I guess I could say chap or old fellow or something like that. I say man. You know, it's a every generation has its way of emphasizing a point by personalizing it.
What? What is he talking?
Phil, what are you talking about? Never mind. I'm going to ask you a question. Are you saying, Larry, that the N-word should be used black person to black person?
I'm saying that I disagree with the court's ruling. Rob Carmosa of the Strive Employment Agency, the 38-year-old Brandy Johnson told jurors that her boss being black didn't make it any less hurtful to be the target of what her attorney called Carmona's four-minute expletive tirade about inappropriate workplace attire and unprofessional behavior. She taped the March 2012 remarks after her complaints about his verbal abuse was disregarded. As she fled to the restroom and cried for 45 minutes, well, she said she was offended, she was hurt, she felt degraded and all of this. But I'm saying, and I believe that Mr. Carmosa, I believe, excuse me, Phil, I believe that Mr. Carmosa probably said, look, you all, you ends, you got to dress better. Now, suppose he said...
Okay, you know something? My question was...
What are you interrupting me for?
Because I got a question. What are you doing on here talking about this?
Aha! Just as I said to these other guys. So, you want to keep me out because of my race?
I think it's a more informed discussion if I'm talking to a black person because they, culturally or subculturally, are far more immersed in the topic than you. You're talking about this from the standpoint of whether it's okay to use the N-word against two black people.
That is correct, yes.
Even if you're white.
Well, I think that that's what the case is saying. Can I say N if it's endearing? And the court said, and excuse me, Phil, I got to stand up. I'm sorry, I went to the hospital today because I had pinching in the front of some slacks that I brought, and I realized that I had cut some blood flow off there, so I had to go to the doctor. Thank God, knock wood. Thank God and thank Jesus that everything's fine there, but every now and again I get the doctor says I'm going to be getting sensory memory. It feels as if it's being my... Excuse, can I say the word penis?
Yeah, that's fine, man, but I want to get back... And I just said man, so don't get offended.
I won't.
All right, I want to get back to the topic.
Okay, but I have a sensory memory of my penis being strangled with some sort of a thread or... hold on. Ow! But it's not, you know? It's a sensory memory.
Yeah, it's like it's like a phantom penis.
Well, I've heard of phantom penis, but I didn't know that that's...
Yeah, well...
Phantom penis.
Oh, grow up, Phil, will you please?
See, this is what I'm talking about. It's okay for you to laugh, but when we do it, we're suddenly children.
All right, I apologize.
I'm sorry, Mr. Henry. I just had to get up. I didn't mean to interrupt the discussion. What I'm trying to say here...
No, I know what you're saying. You're saying that you stand with Mr. Carmosa, who is an African-American...
Why do you have to bring that up?
Because it's very, very... pivotal. It's very important to this topic. You can't say that there's no difference between you using the N-word to a black woman and Mr. Carmosa, or Carmona, I believe is his name, right?
C-A-R-M-O-N-A, Carmosa.
Where are you getting Carmosa when it's O-N-A?
That's just how I feel like saying it. I don't know.
Well, then say it with the N instead of the S.
All right, fine. Carmona. God.
Yeah, that's how we do things in the English-speaking world. Wow.
Are you serious, Larry? Are you serious?
You're sounding like mother now.
Are you serious, Larry?
That's here she comes.
I told Larry, don't rewrite the ink.
Phone, mother. So, Phil, what I'm saying is essentially yes. There is no difference.
Well, I would disagree, and I'm sure that there are a lot of people that would. To say that you have the right to use the N-word or not, and that right is equal, and your right to use that word is not influenced at all by your race, is ridiculous. It's nuts. It doesn't make any sense.
Why do you say that?
Because if you're black and you say to another black person N-word, and you're white and you say to another black person N-word, so totally different context. Totally different meaning.
If you're saying because the black person looks at me and looks at my white, looks at, you know, I'll just say it, looks at my white ass, excuse me for saying that.
No, you're not excused. I want this on an adult level, please.
That's very adult, Phil.
I don't want my white ass. Let's talk as if we are on NPR, okay?
Oh, great. Well, you might as well gear up the crickets. Talk as if we're on NPR. Did you hear that one? Hey, mother. You said, look.
Okay, I understand. I understand you think it's funny. Margaret, your point.
Yeah, I'd like to jump in and make a point because Larry is sitting there pulling on it.
I'm not pulling on it. All I said was I had phantom penis, and I shouldn't even have said that because it was strangled today.
Yeah, who strangled it? Ow! Shut up.
My God, you slapped that well, I shouldn't.
You slapped a retard, I'll say it.
If I hear that word one more time, I'm going to shut the whole show down and I'm going to go fishing, man. There will be no radio show.
Oh, horse dung.
There'll be no more radio show. Understood?
I understand, Mr. Henry. I'm just trying to make the point that in the middle of a debate that we're having here about this, a loose thread or a loose piece of corduroy, because I bought a brand new pair of corduroy slacks. I like them. All right? I happen to look good in corduroy. What can I tell you? And a loose piece of thread wrapped itself around my blank, and it cut the blood flow off, and for a minute it felt as if I had what a lady has, and I was scared. I was scared, and I woke from a nap, and I reached down to make sure. Well, if...
You know, it's really interesting how this conversation has gone from... you know, this N-word trial.
Yeah, I would like, as a woman, I'm speaking as a woman now with sensitivities that other women have. Would you please redirect this conversation to a decent vein, please?
I'm trying to.
I apologize, Phil.
All right, so your opinion is that whites and blacks should have an equal right to use the N-word.
That is my opinion, and that's why I stood with, and I stand with, and I will continue to stand, sit, I'll squat with, if you want, Mr. Carmona, of the Strive Employment Agency. Now, if I could go on with it, just one more point here.
Go ahead. Actually, we got a minute, so hold the line here, Larry, and everybody else. We'll be back with Larry Grover of Conservatives of Kern County in this N-word trial in New York, where a black employer was found, not guilty so much, but he was found to be in the wrong. He has to pay damages to a black employee for using the N-word. Even though his attorney argued that it was possibly a term of endearment. Excuse me, folks. A term of endearment, one that is used by black people to other black people as a way of just communicating in an easier manner. World famous Phil Henry Show, 855-500-7445. World famous Phil Henry Show. And truth being our bitch, we have Larry Grover with us from Conservatives of Kern County. We'll take a phone call or two here at 855-500-7445 as we continue talking with Larry about a trial in New York that involved the use of the N-word in the workplace, but not between white and black. It was not a Paula Deen type deal here, Larry. This was a black employer to black employee.
Correct, Phil, that's my understanding. And to address myself to the point that you earlier made, that I'm a white man and I'm talking about the use of the N-word between black people. I'm a white man, but I'm a man. I'm a white man, but I'm
you say that I have a color, and I don't know why that has anything to do with it, you see.
Because the reason why, I think I explained it already, but the reason why is that there is a very, very decided difference between a white employer using that word, you know.
There may be, but this case would have been groundbreaking, because if they had ruled in favor of Rob Carmona, and let me just read to you the context, Phil.
That's what I think we're missing here. I want more of what happened in this workplace.
Do you have, Larry, this is Margaret, do you have any examples?
I do. As a matter of fact, the 3 and an 8 together, that's 38, right?
Yeah.
All right. Good. The 38-year-old Brandy Johnson told jurors that her boss being black didn't make it any less hurtful to be the target of what her attorney called Carmona.
We can't hear you.
I'm sorry. What part did you miss? Hello?
Start all over again, would you please?
All right. I apologize, Phil. The 38-year-old Brandy Johnson told jurors that her boss being black didn't make it any less hurtful to be the target of what her attorney called Carmona's 4-minute expletive tirade about inappropriate workplace attire and unprofessional behavior. Johnson, who taped the March 2012 remarks about his verbal abuse, said her complaints were disregarded. She said, "I was offended and I was hurt." When you use the word N to an African-American woman, no matter how many alternative definitions that you may try to substitute with the word N, that is no different than calling a Hispanic by the worst possible word you call a Hispanic, calling a homosexual male the worst possible word, which I was wondering, what is that, you know, gay boy, or what is that?
Never mind, okay?
Fine. God.
Yeah, he's got an attitude today, Larry.
No, I don't have an attitude. I don't want to get sidetracked, okay?
All right, you don't want to get sidetracked.
Sorry.
Hey, Larry, I can hang up on you just as fast as anybody.
Anyway, but defense lawyer said the 61-year-old Carmona, a black man of Puerto Rican descent, had a much different experience with the word. Raised by a single mother in New York City's public housing, he became addicted to heroin in his teens and broke it with the help of drug counselors who employed tough love and tough language. Carmona went on to earn a bachelor's degree from Columbia before co-founding Strive. And so, you know, it's a whole lot of feel-good stuff about how this guy was a junkie and then he, you know. And,
oh, yeah, a whole bunch of feel-good stuff.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And let me say this. This guy, he comes from a tough neighborhood. He comes from a tough background. And he looks at her and he says, "Listen, baby, let's just say the N-word, Phil. I'll substitute the N-word with baby." Now, all you babies, you can well imagine a black employer with nothing but black employees. There's no whites to hear any of this, because they're going to, you know, I don't believe that a black employer is going to address a black employee with whites hanging around, bothering him, and all these feel-good liberals. Oh, wow, look, a bunch of black people. Let's sit down and give them our opinion of how good they're doing. And
God, man, you got your own attitude going.
Well, I mean, come on, you know. If it's black folks and they're talking to each other, I'll use the word baby instead of the N-word. All you babies had better listen up. Y'all babies are coming in here dressed like a bunch of hoodlum babies. You don't look like you're businesslike. You don't look like you're getting ready for the workday in a professional manner. You look like some bunch of raggedy-ass babies. And I'm telling all of you babies, men or women, I want you to start dressing for success and quit looking like you eat the hole out of a donut, raggedy-ass, mother-jumping babies, swamp-running, and...
Okay, I get it.
All right, but I mean, that's what he wanted the freedom to say.
And do you want that freedom?
Do you want that freedom?
You know, Mr. Henry, if you can just back off the hysteria...
I'm hanging the phone up, Larry, unless I get an answer and a little less smart-ass, all right?
Hi, Phil. It's Gloria.
It's nice to talk to you, Ms. Grover. I'm talking to Larry.
No, I know. Larry, ever since the doctor told him that he had phantom penis...
What is this phantom penis that you were talking about?
I had a piece of corduroy or fabric that got knotted around it, and this was after I bought the pants, the corduroy. I bought the mail order, and I got excited. Maybe I put them on too fast. What, Mother?
He was waiting by the door for the mail order arrival of his corduroy slacks.
Yeah, so? What's unusual about that?
Oh, nothing.
Give me the phone, Mother. Is that unusual, Phil?
Can we get back to the topic here at hand?
Yes, okay, but...
You and your phantom penis.
No, not me and mine. This is a medical term. And I was waiting with excitement for my corduroy slacks. And they came, and I'm sorry, Mother. I took my pants off in the living room, and Mother had to watch as I stripped down and put on my new pants. I was wearing underwear.
Well, that's just, he thought he was wearing underwear, but Larry, he not only has phantom penis, he's got phantom underwear.
May I have the phone back now? He's sitting and laughing.
Well, it is pretty funny. Were you wearing underwear or not?
Yes, I was wearing underwear. I'm not like a lot of guys that gets his kick stripping in front of his mother.
A lot of guys, huh?
A lot of them that I know. Why, is that unusual?
Yeah, a little bit. Now, getting back here to this case.
Whoa. Don't brush this over. This is important. Are you telling me that that's unusual for a guy to get his laughs stripping down in front of his mother?
Yes, I am. And I'm also telling you it's very normal for a host to hang up on a guy, kick his ass off the air forever and ever if he doesn't do exactly what the host asked him to do in directing the interview.
I'm sorry.
Good one, Phil. That's a
phone, Mother. You'll never take it from me.
Oh, my God.
Larry, take it easy.
I feel like her grabbing my phone, which is a euphemism for, well, never mind. So, this gentleman used the N-word.
And you want the freedom to do the same thing?
I think that I'd like to walk into an office, white or black employees. And back when I actually had my own company, before I got fired, and now I'm living on a cot at Mother's house, and now it's the guy who calls me the N-word, and I've got a Hispanic boss who sometimes says to me, Larry Grover, my N-word.
You're kidding.
Nope. And I go, hey, how's it going? You know, whatever.
Well, maybe you should tell him to stop.
Oh, yeah, sure. I got, this guy's got about 1,000 relatives, and they're all in a car club. Yet they pull up here, man. It's like a Mexican jumping bean exhibition, except they're cars. They're not beans. You know, have you ever seen the deal? The cars are going, woo-hoo, woo-hoo. They're up and down. This guy's got about 1,000 relatives. All of them weigh about 300 pounds in wife beaters. With every kind of tattoo. I mean, his cousin has an arm on him that ought to be cut off and hung in the Louvre. And he's got a car that goes yip-de-doo up and down. And, you know, it's just, I can't get with that at all. They say, hey, Larry, do you want to come out to the car club exhibition? You know, we're going to be rolling our rides this weekend in Compton. And I said, do I look like that kind of a guy? And they say, yes. And,
okay, Larry, that's a great explanation of your social life. Getting back now to the N-word.
Where were we?
Well, I want to get some phone calls in because this is dragging.
I'm sorry, yes. Let's take a phone call here. Our number is 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445. Lloyd, hi, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, Lloyd.
Yes, sir, Mr. Henry, I wanted to tell you that the guy you've got on your program right now, this Mr. Grover, is about the stupidest jackass I've ever heard on any radio broadcast that I have ever heard.
On any radio broadcast, huh?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so that goes back to before the FCC, when they only had 3 radio stations.
You know, sir, you can be a smartass all you want. I've never heard anyone so stupid in my life. You're talking about an N-word. And then you're a white man. Are you sure you're a white man? Maybe you're black and you want to be white. You think about that? Or maybe you're white and you want to be black.
Hey, you know, pal, I sound like you sound like you may be older and I sound like I may be younger.
I'm a Korean War veteran. You got that beat?
Well, what?
You're a conservative and you claim to love and honor America. Well,
all right, hold on, gentlemen. We have to take a break. We'll get back to this gentleman talking to Larry Grover. Our number, 855-500-7445, as we discuss here with Larry, this case in New York where a employer was found to be in the wrong, has to pay damages to an employee who didn't like the use of the word N, and the N-word, I should say, and they're all black people at this business. it just so happens that this word being used in the context of encouraging people to dress more professionally, encouraging people to be more attentive at work, whatever, the employer was using this N-word and was found liable in this case. Back with Larry Grover, who, by the way, demanded to be on our show tonight because he said if we didn't put him on, it would be a case of racial discrimination. And so the whole thing is pretty weird. Back in just a moment here, the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 855-500-7445. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. Welcome back. Beautiful, beautiful night here. Is this Thursday or what is this, man? Wednesday, I don't even know what day it is, but it's a good day. It's a good day for all. World famous Phil Henry Show here with me is Larry Grover from Conservatives of Kern County. We have him with a caller, Lloyd from Alhambra, and we'll get these gentlemen back on the phone. All right, so Lloyd, you were in the middle of, Mr. Bonafide, I would ask you, I know that you're upset with the point of view of my guest. There must be some point, though, that you'd like to make.
I'd like to hear. If the guy's got a point, I'd love to hear it.
Hey, I'll tell you what my point is, and Mr. Henry, you asked me a good question. My point is this. How this ass with his phantom penis, you know...
Now, Mr. Henry asked for a point on the thing that we're talking about.
I'm making my... Don't tell me what to say. How this ass who comes on your program, and I never miss your show, and my wife and I both listen religiously to your program, but this gentleman tonight is defaming and befouling the very airwaves that you use to try to educate your audience. When he comes on and says that he couldn't wait for his corduroy pants to arrive and he stripped down in front of his mother, then goes on to say that that's how some guys get their, and I think the word he used was jollies.
I did not say that that's what I do to get my jollies, sir.
Well, yes, you did. Don't you lie. You said that there's some guy... Didn't he say that, Mr. Henry?
I don't know what he said. It was a very bizarre point to make.
So it's a bizarre point.
Why don't you spit out what you need to say instead of bumbling around like you got a mouthful, okay?
All right, well, let me say this. You're a Korean War veteran, and I appreciate that very much. I appreciate what you did for our country.
Don't lie to me. Tell me what you're trying to say.
All right, then I don't appreciate what you did for our country, and I wish you would have stepped on a landmine.
Why, you dirty, filthy scum.
All right, guys, you guys are baiting each other into these comments. Now, what is your point, sir, regarding Mr. Bonafide and his comments?
My point is very simply this. Any dumbass past the age of three knows that if you're a white man, you don't use the N-word. It is a hostile word to use to black people, given what they have endured in this country's history. And this monkey that I'm talking to here...
Oh, so it's okay to be called a monkey, huh?
I don't mean that in racial terms. I mean monkey as in you've got a monkey's brain.
Don't you understand that the term monkey is considered to be racism?
Yeah, against a black man, yes. What a jackass. You don't understand...
Look, guys, maybe not even using the word...
No, I'm not going to go there. This guy sits his monkey ass down.
So you think it's funny, huh?
No, sir, I don't think it's funny. I am absolutely brokenhearted. I feel bereft and alone, and my feeling for the human race is one of abject sadness when I talk to you. You sat your monkey ass down tonight. You called up the Phil Henry talk show.
And why does he get the right to call me a monkey?
Look, the term...
Phil, Lloyd, this is Margaret Gray. As Phil was... if you mind, Phil?
Go ahead.
That is traditionally a term that is held as very racist against black people, yes. But I don't think calling another white person monkey, I think it's very amusing, to be honest with you. And I think he's trying to say you're not very bright.
All right, well, let's go there. Let's go ahead and go there. Let's go to that place that lady just said.
What place is that?
It's the place where monkeys are not bright.
Well, that sounds like your hometown, my man.
Boy, I tell you what, old man, you know, you may have been a Korean War veteran, but the way I'm feeling now, I could kick you to death. If you were laying down, I'd kick you to death. That's how I feel.
Yeah, well, guess what? You're never going to get me down. on the ground to have you get to get your cookies doing that, like you do when you take your pants off in front of your mother and put on your beloved corduroy slacks, only to have your penis strangled by a piece of stray corduroy, and then you get phantom penis and squeal like a girl. That's what all of those things I heard tonight on this broadcast. Did not hear me squeal like a girl. You want to make some, you want to put some, I got 50 cents that says I did. 50 cents.
Wow, that'll break the bank.
You idiots are not even getting anywhere near the topic here tonight, okay?
I'm telling you that this monkey, and yes, this monkey is on your program saying that he ought to be allowed to use that word, and I'm saying no, and I'm speaking as a white man. I figured somebody has to call representing the white race that has some brains and some social sensitivity as well as sensitivity to history. I've been sitting here all night looking at the trial of the man that attempted to kill the Pope. He's in an Italian courtroom, and you want to look at these greaseballs. I shouldn't say greaseballs. You're the guy. I think this guy's a crank caller. Baba Booey, Baba Booey, Baba. What did I tell you? A crank caller, Henry, and your show let him through. What a... Talk about guys sitting on their monkey asses. Whoever's screening your show...
All right, how did that guy get through?
Well, he called. That's how he got through, bud.
Sounded like he's being serious about it. And then all of a sudden he went Booba Booey.
Bibba Booey, huh?
What is Bibba Booey?
It's not Bibba Booey, it's Baba Booey. And they say that every time they call in from the Howard Stein show. Haven't you guys heard?
Yes, I know all about it. All right, in any event, so what we're left with, I think, is actually a pretty fair indictment of you, Mr. Grover.
Where are you getting that?
Well, I'm telling you now, you've got this point of view that you have not defended very well. I think we have the court's ruling that says no matter the race, it is a word you don't use in the workplace. It's a hostile word. It's an offensive word. And they awarded damages to this woman. And I think it's significant in that it was, it involved the principals in the case were both African-Americans. So it involved black people involved in litigation against black people. And it was about the N-word. Now, you know, it's use in the cultural, the wider cultural arena. It's use in songs. It's use in books. Even it's use in Huckleberry Finn, for instance, which has been defended by black scholars as a piece of American history, as an example of 19th century communication and writing. That, you know, is always going to be, I think, with us. And I hope as long as this is a society that prides itself in its free speech, it will be. But to provoke racist hate, to provoke race hate, and hide it behind the guise of free speech.
Well, what do you call it? If a guy comes on, I just heard the song, what's the guy, Kanye, I don't know how these guys, how they name themselves, but there's a guy there named Little Kanye or Big Kanye or something.
Little Wayne?
Yeah, okay, Little Wayne. He's always saying N-word, N-word, y'all, N-word, N-word, N-word.
Yeah, he's talking about other black people. He's talking about other members of his crew, other members of his neighborhood, of his family. You know, people that are friends, even people that are rivals, but he is speaking of black people.
What about that time in Pulp Fiction when Samuel Jackson called John Travolta the N-word?
Yeah, what about that? Ah, got you on that one, Henry.
Which one?
Well, it was when they were wiping off their hands on Bonnie's new towels there. Remember when they went to Quentin Tarantino's house?
Yeah, they went to Quentin Tarantino's house and...
All right, I know the one. It was Samuel Jackson called John... There's a couple of hoods. They were a couple of scum-sucking dog hoods, okay? And that's the way hoods talk to each other. And I've got to take a break. I'm sorry I have to cut everybody off. Thank you very much, Larry Grover, for your joining in on this discussion here this evening. World-famous Phil Henry Show. We'll continue next hour. Bobby Dooley is going to return with us to discuss, excuse me, football and women who have a far, far better, shall we say, knowledge of football than other women. That's coming up on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, our website. Backstage pass it, man, right now. Hey, welcome back to the world famous Phil Hendry Show. And again, our fond salutations and thank yous to our newest affiliate in Sacramento, KSTE, Ken Charles and the guys. Great to be with them. And we are back here. We'll have Bobby Dooley back on with us tonight to talk about women and football, their knowledge of the game. This is a different kind of discussion because Ms. Dooley, as she has articulated, has a pretty significant knowledge of the game, far beyond what one would expect women to have. And by that, I'm talking about the fans. We're talking about women that are fans, and this is a time of year when football becomes the prevalent, recreation on weekends. She has a pretty extensive knowledge of the game that goes beyond other women, and it got her into some trouble, including a fist fight.
Yes, this was Ms. Dooley was involved in a big dust-up, as they say, at the Homeowners Association Community Center, in which fists were used, as well as a serving tray and a fire extinguisher, Bud. Is that right?
Yeah, Seth took a fire extinguisher and beat it into a lady's face.
Well, didn't beat it into her face, but it was very significant.
And some people may asked the question, wasn't Bobby your guest on the first hour? Yeah, you know, the way listening habits are in radio, many times we will rotate a guest to the third hour, and we'll do that topic because there's a lot of people who... Who's on the line?
David.
Yeah, David.
Well, you know, Phil, all you have to say is, oh, David G. Hall, the vice president of syndication, is...
No, I don't. That's not all I have to say. What do you want?
What do I want? Forget it. Get your donuts.
Call him back and tell him that he's going to get back on the air and tell me what he wants since he interrupted the show.
Hey.
Well, that's unusual. He may be wondering why you're even bringing up the whole rotation of topic issue.
Yeah, David. Phil wants to know why you... Well, I don't know. On account of he's on a rag...
And give me that. Put him on the... David.
I'm just wondering why you, you know, giving me a hard time.
By the way, I could hear your girlfriend asking for a donut.
But I definitely heard you.
I'm okay.
You don't care. Get a load of that. She doesn't care. He heard you saying you wanted a donut.
I think I never had a donut.
Honey, would you swallow the one you've got in your mouth?
That's what she said.
That's what she said. Are you ready for this? Why am I wasting my time?
I don't know. She's your girlfriend, and every time you call me, you're cruising around town with her.
I'm not cruising around town. You know, and that's another thing. Just because I call you up and she's in the car with me doesn't mean we're on a run for donuts, because you got everybody thinking she's a big, fat donut queen, and she's not. She's very shapely, yes. I like my women that way. I think you're very lovely, honey. I can't understand you. It's a...
Let me ask, is there a box of donuts in the car right now?
That's none of your business. That's none of your business.
All right, well, I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to go out on a limb and say, yes, there is.
That's none of your business.
I can hear her in the background somehow warbling out the words for donut. So...
You want to shut up? You want to shut up because he can hear you? Look, Phil, the reason why I called up, and forget about donuts and forget about my girlfriend, the reason why I called up is because do you really need to explain to the audience... You know.
Well, you were right, Margaret.
I knew that. David, I said that's why you were calling.
Well, that's why I'm calling. You got to explain to the audience the whole idea of rotating a topic. Just do it. Don't explain it to them.
I feel like I need to.
Why?
Because there may be some people who were wondering why we're repeating the topic.
You know, there's not that many of those people. The people who were listening to you in the first hour are not there now. The people who listen to you now were not there in the first hour. It's a whole different, it's a different audience. It's audience turnover. It's audience rotation. It's getting the audience to sit on it and rotate. Put it anywhere you want, and it comes out the same. It's your ass, not mine. David G. Hall, out. Now, where's the Krispy Kreme?
Wow, so he's calling in now and giving speeches, huh?
Yeah, Mr. Hall said he'd rather just issue a statement.
That's what he said.
Issue a statement. So he calls up, and he's going to issue his statement, and then...
Lock out with I'm David G. Hall. I said don't lock out with I'm David G. Hall. Why don't you lock out with what you used to lock out with, which was Hall Out.
Yeah, but that means we've got to bring on the Empire Strikes Back music.
What are you laughing about?
Well, I mean, if that's what you want to do. All right, so one other little teeny, itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny, yellow polka-dot bikini bit of business is that at the beginning of the show, we were talking about veterans, and CJ was discussing veterans' work that she's doing, benefiting veterans. And I said, you know, I want to know something that's really interesting, because you guys asked me about this.
Yes, is this the plum?
Yeah, Tom the Piper's son or something, I don't know. It had a plum.
No, it ain't Tom the Piper's son. It's a guy named Joseph Plum Martin. Where do you get that?
It's stuck in his thumb.
Stuck in his thumb?
That's Little Miss Muffet, I think.
What are you talking about? What are you guys talking about?
Dude stuck the thumb in.
I don't know who stuck a thumb in. All I'm telling you, the guy's name is Joseph Tom the Piper's son. This guy is an actual Revolutionary War veteran. And he was fighting for the militia, and he was fighting then for the Continental Army. He was a Continental regular. You ought to read this guy's book, because if you want the view of the American military from the very beginning, this is the guy whose book you should read, Joseph Plum Martin. It's called A Narrative of a Revolutionary Soldier. He ends his book with a few observations that I think are extremely valuable. One of them is that even as long ago as the Revolutionary War, there was this attitude that the militias were plenty, and actually when he wrote the book in the 80s, he was 70 years old. So when would this have been? He was 16 when he enlisted in the Connecticut militia, 15 actually. So he would have been sometime in the early early half of the 19th century. He's a 70-year-old man when he wrote down his memoirs, this narrative of a revolutionary soldier, and he said. And it might have been at that particular time in American history, they were arguing the value of a standing army, which has been a big argument in America in the early years. He said, some people will knock the army regulars and say that we didn't have a vested interest in the survival of the country. They'll say that we didn't fight as hard as the militia. He said, but the militia guys could quit and go home anytime they wanted to. The militia guys were fighting primarily for their own state or their own, province. He said, "Were the regulars, we couldn't go home when we wanted to. We had to stay for the full length of our enlistment. And on top of that, we had to drill and we had to, go through training repetitively and get better at what we did because this is what the officers demanded us. The militias were never that disciplined." So he ends his book with a really sort of excoriates the idea of militias and the state militias as being anything other than a pretty good stopgap at the beginning of the Revolutionary War. But over the long haul, no way. There's no way the revolution would have been won, in the opinion of this soldier, had there not been a Continental regular army. And he said those are the guys that won the Revolutionary War. That's a pretty significant statement to make, because I think there is, even to this day, this idea that the militias were the reason the war was won. The other thing that he says, veterans' issues and the ignoring of veterans, if you think that that's something that is a new feature of American life, it goes all the way back to the Revolutionary War. He ends his book by saying, here are all the things we were promised and we never got. Here are all the things that they said that the revolutionary veteran was going to have. Here's the land. Here's the possessions. In those days, they would say, you'll get a chicken, and you'll get a new boots, and a knife, and...
What do you mean, a chicken?
Something to eat, in other words. There was two things that the revolutionary soldier was battling morning, noon, and night. Fatigue and hunger, fatigue and hunger, fatigue and hunger. And then occasionally, during the winter, frostbite and cold like you wouldn't believe. He said, that was our constant companion. We were hungry and we were tired. We were hungry and we were tired. And there's a quote that I actually tweeted. And the quote goes, I, in good conscience, can say that I always fulfilled my duty to my country. And unfortunately, my country cannot say the same for me. But like a husband with a wanton wife who has a free spirit, I forgive her and hope she will do better in the future. Joseph Plum Martin.
Well, that's an interesting quote. So he's comparing the country to a slut. I mean, I don't mean that as a bad thing, but...
He's comparing the country to a wanton wife who is free-spirited, a woman that is not faithful. And he said, you know what? As the forgiving husband, I forgive her, and I hope she will do better in the future. That's a soldier of the Revolutionary War speaking at the age of 70. But he had a lot of complaints, a lot of complaints. So this idea that our veterans only recently have been treated poorly, no, folks, it goes back to the very beginning. The country, as soon as the war is fought, we tend to forget our veterans. And we did the same thing to the, if you could believe it, the revolutionary, the old soldiers of the revolution, as they used to call them. Interesting. So
what's the name of the book? Because a couple of people are calling up about it and everything.
It's called A Narrative of a Revolutionary Soldier, Joseph Plum Martin, not Tom the Piper's Son.
Yeah, that's the part I got.
Well, who did stick the thumb in? I thought... you know what? If I said that, you'd be all upset because... Is that David?
Yeah.
Oh, come on, David. What do you want now?
What is what's sticking your thumb in? What is that about?
I didn't start that. These guys did.
You guys are talking about sticking a thumb in and pulling out a...
All right, we're going to be right back on a world-famous Phil Henry show. We'll have Bobby Dooley back on here with us, and she's going to talk to us about the excitement, the color, the pageantry that is pro football, and how, as a woman who knows a lot about football, it doesn't exactly make her popular with the other gals. All right, our number is 855-500-7445. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry show. All right, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Bobby and Steve Dooley joining us again here as they did in our very first hour. I was going to discuss with them the football season coming up. I don't think I even asked you, Steve Dooley, if you are a football fan, or maybe I should ask Bobby, you know, did your... I know you said your father is the one who brought you most of your knowledge of football just by sitting and watching the games with him, right?
Well, that's true, Phil. My dad would sit and watch the games with his buddies. You know, he had other guys, because my father was a military, and we spent a lot of time on air bases. We were at Edwards Air Force Base, which was up in the desert north of Mojave, and we were also at places like Homestead in Florida and places like that. But my dad would watch the games, and we would sit and watch the games with him, and I became a big fan of football at that time.
Now, Steve, are you a football fan?
No, I like football, too. And I probably, I don't want to say anything that's bad, but I know more about football than my wife does.
I don't think that's true.
You don't? Yeah, right.
I don't think it's true. I think I know more about football than Steve, Bill.
No.
All right, well, I don't want to get into it, have an argument ensue here, but... I imagine it's a very, it's a lively house on weekends.
Hold on, Phil. Steve, I know about football better than you do because my father used to say that you were sort of a legless man when it came to that.
Yeah, your father's saying that.
A legless man?
My dad used to say, I love Steve, and nothing would tear me away from Steve, but my father always said that, what was my dad's old saying? For 50 cents in an old coat, I could find myself a better mule than Steve.
Dad, it's mean and everything.
Yeah, well, that does sound mean.
Oh, it wasn't mean. God, the two of you. I always thought, Phil, you butched up. I thought you cleaned up better than that, Phil. Anyway.
No, it just sounds like your father was rather cruel to your husband. What, 50 cents and an old coat?
Yeah, 50 cents and an old coat. Old mule.
I mean, don't lip lock the phone like it's your wife. Or I should say you're its wife.
Yeah, see that, Mr. Henry? See that, Mr. Henry? That's what I put up with.
What? I don't understand, all right?
I understand that I'm the phone's wife. Should be the other way around.
See, Steve's the only one in the world that would keep track of something like that.
Well,
you did say to him, don't lip lock the phone, which I think is a good piece of advice because we had some distortion there, but I don't think it has to be insulting. I think we're getting far afield of what we want to talk about, and that is the erudition, your knowledge of football, and the various events that you have there at the Western States Homeowners Association during football season, and you've had some run-ins with some of the women.
Yes, I have, Phil.
What do you attribute that to?
Well, I attribute it to the fact that I come from a football culture. As I mentioned, my father was a very big... My dad also followed the Air Force Academy. He didn't go to
He didn't go to the Air Force Academy, but he followed their teams.
Yeah, they're called the Falcons.
He knows that, Steve. Would you please?
Thank you, Steve. I would rather hear Bobby if I'm listening to two voices at once.
Okay.
So it was the Atlanta Falcons. Not the Atlanta. Steve, would you? I swear I am a Christian woman, but I'm about to say GDU.
Uh-oh. This is a bad one.
No, Phil, it's okay to say that if I'm doing it in the Christian sense, isn't it?
I don't know. I'd rather you not even get sidetracked. So, Steve, just please don't interrupt. So tell me again. Your father followed the Atlanta, not the Atlanta, the Air Force Academy, right, bud?
Yeah, the Air Force. Well, wait, not the Marine Corps.
Yeah, we said the Marine Corps, Miss Henry.
Phil, come on, wake up.
All right, the Air Force Academy, and then what?
What do you mean, then, that he followed the Air Force Academy?
Okay, but what I asked, what, forgot what I asked.
You asked whether my wife and the other lady, I forget.
Oh, come on, you asked, Margaret.
You asked Bobby how she's faring with the other women in the community because she knows more about football than they do.
Right.
Thank you, Margaret. Well, as I mentioned, not too well, because the other gals in our circle of taste, we also have our gal pal. Gal pal is a lower rung of circle of taste, and I decided to introduce gal pal because it was a way for the gals to gal around, you know, gal pal around. We could pal around as gal pals.
Do you have a particular affinity for saying that because it's starting to grate on my nerves?
Why? The reason I'm saying gal pal?
Yeah, right there. Please don't say that.
Okay, I understand what Margaret's saying. I get the idea. Gal pal is a lower rung of circle of taste, and
it's like the triple A of Major League Baseball, only it's gal pal.
She's doing that on purpose.
What?
She's going gal pal.
I didn't say gal pal. God, you sound like the Wicked Witch of the East. I said...
How dare you?
I said gal pal.
All right, enough with gal pal. What's that got to do with football?
What a hard ass you are. God, I don't know whether to be turned on by it or put off. Because there is something that's very exciting about your anger, Mr. Hayes. I don't know what it is. Anyway,
That's nice to know, and especially in front of your husband. That's great.
He does it all the time.
No, I do not do it all the time.
All right, Bobby, I've got like 2 minutes before I just, you know, call a halt to the proceedings here.
Fine. The women are not reacting very well, Phil. I am very knowledgeable. The guys tend to gather around me. A lot of the guys who come to watch the games are very excited to see a woman who knows about football. I can sit and talk to men. I can say, the slot receiver, he's not covered. A quick pass to him, a quick slant into him. You know, that's 6 foot. I talk this way to the men, and the gals are upset. That's why I started Gal Pal, to try and become more conversant with the gals on things that are a little more butch than what we do in Circle of Taste.
All right, when you say more butch, what do you guys do in Circle of Taste?
Well, Circle of Taste is more about wine and cheese and brassiere. I don't know. It's more feminine, Margaret, you know.
Yes, it's Circle of Taste is about wine and cheese, dishes, as Bobby indicated, brassieres, you know, comparing panties. It's not really anything I want to discuss with men around. Panty liners, new...
tampons.
Well...
Oh, okay, all right, never mind. And then what is Gal Pals?
Gal Pals, well, you want to say...
Yes, Gal Pals is more about football and kayaking and things that we can do to continue to impress our husbands and boyfriends that we figuratively have got a pair and we can hang with the homeboys and, that we can bring it on a Saturday night. But Gal Pal is the lower rung.
So you guys value the more feminine arts, if you will, or the more feminine things over these Gal Pal things.
Why do you say that?
Because gal pal, you said, is a lower rung.
Oh, yeah, it is, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah, I told you.
Now, maybe I have to elevate it above...
Well, why would you want to elevate it?
Well, because I think that gal pal has more sex appeal now than does Circle of Ten. I don't know. I have to think about it.
All right, we're going to come back here with Bobby and Steve Dooley, continue our discussion here of women, their knowledge of football, and their... their ability to impress men with it, and also what kind of conflict it puts them in with other women that are not so knowledgeable about football and may not really like the fact that the football women are dominating the social scene. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445, and online at philhenryshow.com.
Did I mention Gail Pam?
Yeah, you did already, Gus. Like to drive me nuts, knock a buzzard off a crap wagon.
Steve.
Not almighty.
All right, welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. A backstage pass, that's what you need, man. That gets you our live-streaming video of the show.
Yeah, you got video and you got a podcast and everything.
Get the podcast of the show. You get our 5,000 hours of archive material. I mean, you know, it's sick. It's sick what you get for $9.99 a month. And it's all there at philhenryshow.com. It's the largest archive of a single radio show anywhere in the world. Our website, what we got, what I got, you know? What I got, man, what I got. Okay, so check it out at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. And, of course, we have our classic archive podcast, so you get a a 30-minute archive podcast every day. Lots of things, lots of cool stuff, and more planned. Also, we're fully mobile, so if you have a mobile device, you want to watch our video cast on your mobile phone, you can do that. iPhone, Samsung, I don't care, man. Some of you guys have these Androids, and they're constantly changing the technology. They're constantly changing the innards, the guts of some of these Android phones. So on any given day, who knows whether you're going to pick us up or not. But the fact is, on just about every mobile device, our video cast is available. All of our podcasts available, all of our archives available, as well as on your desktop, too. We have a mobile website that you can navigate from your phone. So it's about as user-friendly as it can get, and it's getting more user-friendly and more cool and more groovy and more bitchin' with each passing day. All right. Ms. Dooley and her husband, Mr. Dooley, on the line with us. Getting sidetracked is the ought to be the subtitle of this show, the Phil Henry Show, or how I got sidetracked out of about five or six different topics tonight. And to that end, what we were discussing is the way that other women are treating you, Bobby, because you have this knowledge of football. Now, I know you described for us in some detail being at a Super Bowl party. It was a chili cook-off.
No, it was not a chili cook-off, Phil. It was, I think it might have been our cheese brie. Was it the brie, Steve?
Spreadable cheese.
It was the spreadable cheese festival.
Well, that's what brie is.
Well, brie is spreadable, but brie is more of a higher class. We were just doing something with the squeeze cheese. And we didn't want to call it the squeeze cheese festival. We called it spreadable cheese. Spreadable cheese and bun slices. I don't know what it was called, but that's what we featured.
What? I'm sorry, I'm getting lost here.
Yeah, see, Mr. Henry, can I do it? Can I do this one?
Go ahead.
See, Mr. Henry, every time we have a football game, we'd have a different festivity, and this was cheese with bun slice.
What's a bun slice? I'm sorry for sounding so impatient.
We're talking about little fingers of bread.
Oh, so you just mean slices of bread?
Yes, but the small kind.
Yeah, the ones that come off the buns.
Well, okay, so in any event, it doesn't matter what you called it.
Well, it does matter because it's the class of people that you get. And see, at our brie spread, which we call the spread out, or the everyone spread.
What is that?
That's when we feature brie, it's called everyone spread out.
Yeah, everyone spread out. We have that in October. They have that in football, too.
Everyone spread out is when you do brie.
Yeah, when we do brie and other high-class spreads.
What's the one, the other one?
What other one?
Phil, why do you let yourself in for it? Just...
Yeah, all right. So you're at this other one.
Well, now I don't know which one you're talking about.
The one with Jim's, really, and you had the dust up.
Oh, yeah. No, that was the spreadable cheese with the bun slice.
That's what you called it?
I forget what we called it, but that's what it was.
All right, so in any event, this was a football game, right?
Yeah, no, it was, yes, it was on TV, the football game. And so I was in the middle of all the guys. All the husbands were there, and we were having a great time. We were watching the game, and I was making my comments, and the guys were making theirs. And every time a good play happened, they'd lift me above their heads, and I was wearing a skirt at the time, and Steve made a big deal. No one was looking up my skirt, honey.
I don't know.
Steve made a big deal out of it at the time, Phil, and I don't want to be juvenile, but the guys would lift me up and parade me around, and Steve said that he saw a couple of them, Stu Brewster and who else?
That's Carl Greeley.
That they were looking right up my dress.
Yeah. And that's my understanding of it.
That's what you're understanding? What does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean?
You're awfully interested, Mr. Hanyard, looking up my wife's dress.
I didn't say anything about looking up your wife's dress. I said, what do you mean by your understanding?
But my understanding, they were looking up her dress.
What does it mean, Steve? Were they or weren't they?
My understanding was they were.
Were you told about it, or did you see it?
I was told about it.
Well, there you go. Somebody told you about it. Who told you?
Carl Greeley.
So he said he was looking up your wife's dress.
Yeah.
Well, why would he lie? Now I've got... Okay, so there are a score to settle with Carl Greeley. Okay, let's write that down. Carl Greeley. He's got a fight coming. It's coming today. Okay.
Come on, Bobby.
Look, at Bobby, I don't want to hear about any fights that you're planning. I just want to know about this one football game. So the guys were lifting you above their heads.
Well, that's not the football game, Phil. You've got some real filthy mind.
All right, Ms. Dooley, I appreciate you being on the show. I'm going to go now. I'm going to continue my program, and we'll go in another direction.
So you're hanging up on me.
Because of the fact that you guys can't get to the point, and now you got me with the filthy mind looking up your dress.
How could you be looking up her dress? She wasn't even there.
Yeah, you wasn't even there. Was you? No, you wasn't.
No, you're right. I wasn't.
Oh, my God. You know, she pays for that airtime.
Oh, no, not that. Really? Do we have any guests on this show that don't pay for airtime?
Does anybody have any guests on any show anywhere that don't pay for airtime? That's a question what you ought to ask, Mr. Henry.
Well, I'm not going to ask that question because I don't care about any other people. At least we don't pay our way onto radio stations. Now, do we?
I don't know.
Well, at least I don't think we do. Thank you, Ms. Dooley and Mr. Dooley and the rest of the Dooleys, for your interest in our program, but I can't stand it any longer. So that's that, man. I'm not going to talk about that fist fight she had or anything else. This guy committed suicide. You know this Ariel Castro? You know the guy that kidnapped those women?
Yeah, he committed suicide in his cell, I think, in the Cahuga. I'm looking at the story right now. The Cahuga. What is it, bud?
No, it's Franklin. Franklin County. Ariel Castro hanged himself in his prison cell, according to the Franklin County.
So it wasn't Cuyahoga. That's the county that you were looking for.
Oh, I thought it was. What's it called?
Cuyahoga. That is Cleveland, and it says Franklin County. Nonetheless, he committed suicide in his cell. This is a psychopath, or they don't even use the term psychopath anymore. It's called antisocial disorder. Now, it's not even a disease. You can't even call it a disease. You can say that it's abnormal. But if it's a disease, you would think it's something that can be cured, and there is no cure that we know of. That's number one. The other thing about antisocial disorder is, unlike other so-called mental illness, in the strict definition of at least being legally insane, these people with antisocial disorder know full well what is right and what is wrong in the eyes of society. They know full well what is breaking the law and what is staying on the right side of the law. There is no confusion there at all. They know exactly what they're doing, and they're compelled to do it. They're compelled to do it for sexual reasons. They're compelled to do it for reasons of control. They're compelled to do it for reasons that we can only speculate on. This guy, Castro, a guy with this antisocial personality disorder, wound up killing himself in his jail cell. Now, a lot of people, to make themselves feel better, and I'm not criticizing, but a lot of people will say, well, he was a coward, you know.
Well, he is a coward if he does that.
I don't think it's that easy.
Why do you say that?
Because these guys are about control. These people are about calling the shots. These people are about being in charge. If there's one thing that these cats don't like, it's being manipulated. They want to be the manipulators. And if they're being manipulated, they feel out of control. They get they're enraged. That's where you really get the rage part of these people, when they don't feel that they're controlling their own destiny, when they don't feel they're controlling their own lives. We just had that guy, Israel, what's his ass? What's that dude, Hayes? Is that the guy?
The guy in Alaska, yes. They think is a serial killer. He killed that couple in Vermont. And also the young girl, I think, in Texas.
Right. That guy killed himself in his federal cell in December of 2012. Same story. The reason why they killed themselves is to simply say, I will be the decider as to when I die, not you. Or to say even more to the point, I will decide what happens to my life. You are not going to decide anything about my life. As a matter of fact, I'm going to make it impossible for you to decide anything about my life. I'm going to kill myself. Now, a lot of them will leave these suicide notes that make you feel sorry for them, that make you think, oh, the poor guy. And a lot of them are probably, you know, rather heartfelt in their self-pity, because these are people that don't have any empathy, man. They don't feel anything for other people. I mean, can you imagine if this guy had any empathy at all, any feelings at all, he wouldn't have put these girls through what they went through. But it was all about controlling these three lives. No, they feel sorry for themselves. They feel sorry for their own predicament. They feel sorry that they're caught, and they feel sorry that they can't get out of being caught. And so they write their little suicide notes, you know, I see no way out, and, you know, I hope. And they manipulate to the bitter end. Now, one of the most famous cases, one that I will never tire of mentioning, is this guy, Roger Coleman.
Of the Coleman Lantern?
I'm gonna kick your ass. Do you know that?
I'm just kidding around.
Phil, watch it.
No, not of the Coleman Lantern. Why'd you say that?
That's what I thought.
Yeah, he thought it was, man. He was reading a thing about Coleman.
I don't care what you're reading. Shut up while I'm saying this stuff, okay? You almost got belted. It's a good thing Margaret held me back.
Well.
What's that supposed to mean?
Nothing.
Yeah, you think you ought to do some damage there, man?
No.
Oh, want to try me, huh? Anytime, day or night, you say the word, we'll go at it. You just say the word, bud, and it's round one. You ready?
Right now?
Sure.
No.
Don't you ever call me out, okay? Because you'll get it. I don't care who said it, you'll get it.
All I said was a Coleman Lantern.
That's the dumbest thing I ever heard anybody say while I'm talking about serial killers, psychopaths, and this whole thing about killing themselves in a jail cell, and you want this guy to be the Coleman Lantern guy. No, it wasn't a Coleman Lantern guy. The Coleman Lantern guy wouldn't kill himself because he knows he's going to inherit billions.
God, if he's an antisocial psychopath, he'll won't care.
Yeah, okay. We'll be right back on the world-famous Phil Henry Show with more of this just marvelous conversation, and oh, how intelligent is it are. Our number, 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445, world-famous Phil Henry Show. I'll tell you about this Roger Coleman guy. This guy was a real, talk about a manipulative guy. The Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. Welcome back to the Phil Henry Show here, final segment of the night. Always great to have you with us. If you're watching us online, if you're watching us via Phil TV here at philhenryshow.com, and you want to hear us on the radio, you got to bug those radio stations. We've got some great affiliates, and I'm telling you, this is a radio show that is a unique offering. And it's almost like, I don't know, man. I don't know what the problem is, but, you know, they got the problem, not us. You know, we're enjoying ourselves here, and you guys are enjoying it. So if... you want this show on in your market, then bug these cats that are running these talk stations with all of this, you know...
Crappy programming.
Yeah, crappy programming. All right? I mean, I don't know how else to say it, but that's what you got to do. And I know that you will be successful, and I know that we'll march on to greater glory, God willing.
Hey.
Thank you, bud. Thank you.
All right, enough.
All right. Getting back to the Coleman, Roger Coleman. Now, here's a guy, and I say that they will manipulate you after death.
Now, this is the man that claimed he was innocent up until they pulled the switch, right?
Right up until they pulled the switch.
Well, it was lethal injection.
Yeah, that lethal injection. Do they pull a switch on that, or what do they do?
No, they push a button.
Yeah, they push a button, I think, and all the juice just goes right into you, man, and you're gone, you know, within, like, whatever time it takes.
Well, I don't think it's very humane. It takes too long, I think.
Oh, whatever, Margaret, you know.
Well, what do you mean, whatever?
What do you mean it takes too long?
I think it takes, like, 30 minutes.
Yeah, but you know what? The first thing they pump into these people is something to calm them down so they're going to feel all groovy, and dying won't matter. I mean, that's the first thing that happens. And frankly, I don't give a crap, okay? So let's not even get bogged down in that. The fact is, this guy Coleman swore up and down, left and right, backwards and forwards, that he was an innocent man, and he'd been convicted of raping and murdering his own sister-in-law. Raping and murdering his own sister-in-law, who lived just a few doors down from where he was living. This guy was, I believe he was a coal miner or some such occupation. He came home and then went to her house, attacked this woman, and murdered her. Now, they had DNA evidence, but it was in the early 90s or late 80s before there was sufficient testing, that there was the foolproof testing that eventually they developed in the late 90s and on into the, you know, 2000s. So this guy was convicted primarily, I think, on circumstantial evidence, on some testimony, on perhaps there was some blood match in terms of blood type. There might have been a fingerprint, but it was not DNA. Now, Coleman worked this. I mean, this guy worked it. He said, I'm an innocent man. You're going to be putting to death an innocent man. He got the Time magazine to put his ugly mug on the cover. He got Newsweek to put his kisser on the cover. He had people from all over the planet Earth talking about what a great sweetheart of a guy he was. And oh, my gosh, golly Jesus. And the other thing was that he would talk to groups of school kids. I mean, he would talk to groups of middle school kids about, well, now, you know, this is what's happening. I'm an innocent man, and the system does make mistakes, and I can only hope that you'll change it when you get old enough. All of this horse dung. I'm telling you.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. Now comes the day that the guy is going to be put to death, and his last words were, you are putting an innocent man to death. I hope you people can live with what you're about to do. My conscience is clear, okay? And they pushed the juice into this slob, and the slob died.
Hey, you call the guy a slob. He could be innocent.
Oh, is that right?
Well, what do you think, man? He ain't innocent because Phil wouldn't be telling a story right now.
You mean he wasn't innocent?
Hold on for a minute.
Call the guy a slob.
That's exactly what I called him, a slob. So now comes the Innocence Project, or one, and I got nothing against the Innocence Project. I think they do great work. Honest to God, I do. I thank God for people like the Innocence Project. The kids, the West Memphis 3 wouldn't be free today. And those poor kids, you talk, now those kids, thank God they got out. There's an example, ladies and gentlemen, of how as bad as the system can act sometimes, the Coleman case and the West Memphis 3 cases are exemplary, I think, of when we can get something right that was possibly an injustice. Anyway, the Innocence Project comes along, or this lawyer takes over the case, says, this Roger Coleman was innocent. We have his DNA evidence. We have the DNA evidence from the scene. Yes, we have now developed an ability to identify the DNA that was at the scene, and I am demanding that the governor of the state of Virginia test this, because this is going to prove that we put an innocent man to death. I forget who the governor was. It might have been Warner. Or maybe one of the new governors said no, 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 and finally said yes.
That they would test it.
Yes, that they would. He'd say, okay, we'll do it. The prosecutor was confident. The cops were confident. But the defense attorneys and the people that had rallied to Roger Coleman's side said, you're going to find out something now. It's going to curl the hair on your head, Jack. You put an innocent man to death. And they tested the DNA. Now, I saw the documentary where the defense attorney, the guy that was fighting for Roger Coleman, even after his death, when he took the phone call from the lab to give him the results, I actually saw the look on this guy's face. I don't think he ever stopped smiling, but he said, there's the phone call, and he picks it up. Hello? Yeah? 99%, huh? So it was a done deal.
Well, was it the guy or wasn't it?
But what do you think, man?
Yes, bud, it was the guy. He did it.
But he said he didn't do it.
Well, do you think he might have lied?
He did. Yeah, he said he didn't do it, and he said he didn't do it all the way up to the minute they pulled a switch on this piece of crap. But guess what? That's what psychopaths do. They can lie even while they're staring face in the staring death in the face, or facing the death,
or faces of death,
or faces of death. So he was guilty. They did exterminate, and that's a good word, the right guy. And this guy Coleman paid the price, man. He paid the price, and he tried to get everybody to think that he was innocent, and he wasn't. And his attorneys and all the people that fought the fight for this guy, they were betrayed. They felt betrayed, you know?
Yeah, I would. I want to take his. I want to dig him up and kick his ass or something.
Dig him up and kick his ass. That's a hot one.
Well, I mean, who knows, you know? Thank you, everybody. Thank you, CJ, everyone back in D.C. Thank you all for supporting our radio show. I can tell you this right now, that if I'm ever guilty, I'll let you know. Anyway, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be back tomorrow night. Thanks to Bobby Dooley and all of our guests. Check us out at philhendryshow.com, philhendryshow.com. We'll have our show log posted within minutes. We will have our podcast of tonight's show up by the early morning hours, and we'll have our classic podcast, episode 232, is due up by the early morning hours as well. Thanks to all of you, and we'll see you tomorrow night.